The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Get ready to dive into the gritty and thrilling adventure of Blades in the Dark. In this episode, we are discussing the crucial elements of character and crew creation and why they're so important for gameplay. Join us as we explore the 7 unique playbooks, the process of creating a crew and selecting standard items, and the various crew types, including our own. We'll also be delving into crew upgrades, managing cohorts, and much more. Don't miss out on this exciting introduction to Blades in the Dark.
Hello and welcome, heroes, to Crit Academy Dice and Dialogue. I'm your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Ian.
I'm your co-host, Alex.
And I'm your co-host, Brandon.
I am really, really excited to delve into character creation on Blades in the Dark and its importance related to the gameplay. While we have touched on stuff on the previous episode in regards to that this miniseries, we're going to really delve into the examples from the actual character creation process as we kind of walk through it and give you guys the overall view of the process. Now, there's a lot that goes into the character creation process, but it's actually in a nice flow, huh?
Except not really. It's very thin.
I disagree. I think that there's a lot that goes into it.
For character creation, yes. Putting it into crew into the mix, sure.
Yes, that's kind of what I'm talking about as a whole, the whole process, because yeah. There's a lot you're supposed to do. So we're going to kind of delve into the playbooks, which are kind of like the classes and their special abilities, yep. As well as some of the crew creation details. So why don't we get right into it? So we've all played as players. I know in the last episode, Alex had pointed out that this is her third time playing. It was all of our first time, I think.
Yep.
So each of us will, as we're going through and discussing some of the actual playbooks, we're just going to talk specifically about the ones we took as we work through some of the abilities and features, but we will give a high-level overview of all of them. So as I mentioned, the playbook is basically a class option, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a number of different playbooks that you can choose from that give you kind of the tools you need to do the job of that particular playbook. Now, Alex, you had mentioned that you have played previously as a player. Which playbook did you pick?
I actually picked the Fury.
Okay, that's not on my thing, so it must be one of the newer or expansions, maybe?
Or one of the hacks.
Or one of the hacks.
Oh, it might have been one of the hacks. Well, I mean, it was essentially the cutter. I was very much a bruiser thing. Mm-hmm. I had a history in being a bodyguard for people who needed bodyguards from the Bluecoats. And mm-hmm. She had a very deep love for designer handbags. I also picked luxury, and I picked designer handbags as my thing. So she would literally like eat ramen and like eat soup all day and then spend all her money on designer handbags or just steal them.
Basically all her money. She doesn't eat nice. She eats garbage just so she can get better handbags.
Yes. That's
hilarious. I like that. And so it's based off the cutter, which you mentioned is the bruiser. They're all about... Yep. Good at winning fights with violence and intimidation, and it's a really great play style if you really want to get your way.
If you want to play a thug, yeah. And Crunch Irand, basically his whole thing was he was a temp worker who often did up blue collar jobs, be like dock worker, guy who swings like the sledgehammer in the butcher shop, works in the warehouse, and so forth.
Nice.
And was kind of the muscle for the crew as needed. And also was a part-time slash... Nah, who am I kidding? Full-time drunk.
Brandon?
Khajiit was a sneaky little man from a desert area who would roam around looking for information, gathering weaknesses against his enemies, and trying to be as helpful as he could to his crew until he inevitably went for his own.
Betrayed him.
And you took Hound, correct?
You were a Hound, right?
I took Hound.
Yep. Which is good at tracking things down.
Yeah, good at tracking things.
Like a bloodhound.
Yep. And like you get extra die for trying to find information, too.
Yeah, which is really good. So just so you guys know that are listening, there's the Cutter, Hound, Leech, which are good at using alchemy and wrecking stuff with sabotage.
I almost went that route.
Yeah, that was a nice, interesting one. And you play a leech if you'd like to be creative with weird tools, and I think that that's really good.
Yep.
A slide. Slides are good at social situations and subterfuge, as well as, you know, manipulating and deceiving people. I played a spider with Sly. Slynn Vale, Sly was his alias. Because you can't be given away that you're the mastermind, right? And that you're, if you ever get caught, right, you need to back up. Which was a spider, which is, you know, focused on the masterminding maneuvers and gets his web across many different locations and people and plucks them to manipulate him in his form, that in a form that he wants. And then the whispers are good at magical stuff and dealing with like apparitions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you play them if you like to meddle in the dark arts and arcane powers, which is really good. So once you've kind of picked your playbook, which determines kind of your key features, you get to pick something that I think is really cool, which is your heritage. Now, as we mentioned in the setting, there is a number of focus areas that you can really pull your character's story from.
Yep.
To help develop them. But what I think is interesting is it also gives you bonuses based on your heritage and your... Is it based on your heritage or just yes. on your playbook?
It's just on your playbook.
Okay.
Your heritage isn't really anything. It's more for role-playing.
No. The playbook gives you that kind of stuff. You get 2 pips based off of your heritage or your background. I can't remember which one. I think it's your heritage, but you get 2 additional pips to, or 3 additional pips to make it 7 pips.
I don't remember reading that.
Well, I'm sure that if anybody can find it, it'll be you.
Yeah, I remember it saying that.
So, anyway.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I don't remember reading that.
While they look at that, I really think that the way they're written really fleshes out the world to a really great degree. For instance, I picked my character was from the Dagger Isles, I think, which is a very interesting low, or no, that's not Dagger Isles. That's the background, I think. Yeah.
Yep.
So you can pick the character. For instance, the Akaros background is the largest and most industrialized land in the Imperium, which is the name of like the kingdom, and is basically the home and capital city of Duskwall itself. So
I just want to retcon myself. We're actually both wrong. So your playbook begins with 3 dots that are already placed. You get to add 4 dots that it'll 7 total. At the start of the game, no action rating may have more than 2 dots unless under a special ability that tells you otherwise. Assign the 4 dots like this. Put 1 dot in any action you feel reflects your heritage. Put 1 dot in any action that you feel reflects your background, and put the 2 remaining dots where you please. So you get 3. So you get 3 pips in a skill based on what playbook you have. You get 1 pip in a play based on your heritage. You get 1 pip based on your background, and you get 2 pips that you get to do whatever you want with.
Go with however you want it, because it's an RPG game, and that's a guidebook versus rules. It definitely is pushing you towards following your heritage, I think. So, for instance, like the Dagger Isles is a rootless wanderer type person, right? The people there grew up on ships and travel the seas and all that stuff. So it would make sense to include, you know, point somewhere related to sort of that sort of experience. What were some of the heritage you had played on your character?
I went with the Arcarios just because it was like the generic catch-all faction.
Okay.
It just said like all of Europe.
Basically. That's what I get when it says it's basically the Imperium.
Yeah.
Industrialized land.
I did Iruvia.
Iruvia. Just
a rich and powerful desert kingdom far to the south. Very reminiscent of like a Egyptian or...
See, now when you say that, now I think of Khajiit as like a balding cat man.
Like, I never said he was a cat.
I know,
you guys just assume that because my name is Khajiit.
Yes. Anyways, what about you, Alex?
I actually don't remember. Is there any way you can go over what, like, quickly what the different heritages are? Do you have that on your thing?
The Takaros, the Skavlan, the Severos, the Iruvia, the Dagger Isles, and the Akaros.
Ooh, I think I picked the Dagger Isles, but I don't remember. It's been years.
Yeah. I picked Dagger Isles because...
Travelers and ship livers, basically.
Yeah, and that basically explained why he had such a Sly had such experience manipulating people, because he's been traveling and talking and interacting with people from all over, right? Yep. So that built up his web. It's the start of his web, right? Building connections. Did you guys tie any of that into your character design at all?
Not really.
Yes.
How did you do that?
Well... In the physical standard, not with the abilities.
No, that's fine. Just in any capacity.
The way I spoke, the way I dressed, I had a Khajiit dressed.
Oh, yeah, you were in like a robe, right?
Yeah.
You were more in like...
Dirty robes and such.
Yeah.
That's very cool. I gave Sly a very long ribbon-like scarf because it was a tool for when you travel to... he can put it over his face to keep the sand and stuff blowing into his face. He can use it to create shade. And so it's a tool that not only did it look elegant on him, but since he traveled the Dagger Isles as well as like the sea and stuff, it was a way to kind of protect himself from the environments without having to carry some sort of special umbrella or something. So then once you pick your heritage, and once again, we talk about the description of assigning points, but your heritage is different than your next step, which is a background, right? Now, the background basically describes what you did before you joined your crew and became this, whatever the crew is, Assassin's Guild, smugglers, you know, thugs, whatever. Ian, what background did you pick?
Underworld.
Underworld? So basically a street urchin gang member type style.
Young thug.
Young thug. What about you, B?
Underworld. I chose Underworld.
Literally, the game is Blades in the Dark and you just went with the generic Underworld.
That's right.
Alex, did you pick Underworld too?
No, I picked Trade because she was a bodyguard, and that's kind of a trade in my mind, like being able to like maneuver that. And so I picked Trade. But I find it very interesting that you guys did you read a description that said that the Underworld was like the seedy? Because I didn't actually read the descriptions of the backgrounds or the heritage. I was told them by the person who was my GM. Mm-hmm. And they described Underworld as being like
Underworld, a street urchin, gang member, young thug, or other outcast who grew up on the streets.
Okay, cool. I actually kind of like how my GM did it better, because Underworld, whenever it was with us, was actually supposed to be connected to spirits or demons or like Underworld. Cooler.
I get it. And considering the setting, that actually is very cool. I like that.
Right.
That would have been better.
Yeah, I think so. whose name's on the front of that book?
John Harper.
John Harper. So if you want to, in the next iteration, upgrade Underground or Underworld to include what our discussion, you're welcome to borrow it. So I chose the law, right, which is basically an advocate for, the blue coats or and following the balance of laws. Now, you might be asking, why on earth would a mastermind of evil intent want to know the law? Because
exactly.
It makes it easier to skirt the law when you know it.
It's true. Also, I very much see Sly doing that as a way to get insider information, like to be able to get like a radio, you know, like a cop radio, or to be able to walk in and be like, hey, Nancy, what's the tea? And then she's like, let me tell you about, you know, like being able to make the connection with the crazy secretary lady who likes all the drama.
Yeah. I got that. So he actually did carry around a a book that was details all the well-known laws, as well as including some fictitious ones that he could try to leverage in certain situations. And I didn't get a chance to use that, but I had short little lines written for bullshit laws that would let him get out of trouble by quoting a very specific detail and location and article and paragraph and, you know, see subsection 13 of blah, 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 to try to get out of shit. Because I'm so stupid like that.
So Sly was a rules lawyer, is what you're telling me.
For the laws, yes. So, at that point, you get to assign your action points, right? Your four action dots beyond the three for the class. It says, put one dot in any action that you feel reflects your heritage, one that you feel reflects your background, and then two wherever you anywhere you please. Max of two into one stat. I think that's an interesting note because they basically means you can't. That is on page 54, underneath assign four action dots.
Because mine says something totally different.
Well, mine PDF came from their book that's on sale the other day.
Yeah, I'm on the official Blades in the Dark website, so.
And I have the book.
You have an actual printed book.
It's probably an old iteration.
It could have been adjusted at some point, but it doesn't matter. It's not that big of a deal. Yeah. Nobody cared. Nobody would have known if we didn't bring it up.
I'm just saying that might be the river conflict. Anyway.
Anyway, so once you've got you've applied your points, you get to choose a special ability. Now, this is what really separates your character. So even if we're both running cutters like Alex and Ian did,
yep.
The special ability, the heritage, the background, and now the special ability, as well as the way you apply your points, impact the way you play the character. Yeah. So it makes it very difficult for the same two people to have the exact same character, which I think is great.
So I actually have the cutter character sheet up on Roll20 right now. They actually do have them. So yeah, I think it would be really cool to just read a couple of examples of the cutter, yep. Since we have two cutters here. Which one did you choose, Ian?
I need to flip back to the correct page.
Why don't you tell us first, Alex, and then why he finds it.
Okay, cool. I chose Bodyguard, of course. When you protect a teammate, take a 1+1d, so one dice, die to your resistance roll. When you gather info and anticipate possible threats in a current situation, you get +1 to the effect.
All right. That's cool. And I ended up choosing not to be trifled with, which... let me push myself to do one of the following. Perform a feat of physical force that verges on superhuman, or engage a small gang on equal footing in close combat.
Ian, you would pick the don't fuck with me one, wouldn't you? I love it.
Yep.
What about you, Brandon? Oh, we talked at length about it, I think.
Yeah, we already talked. Yeah. Which one did Sly do? What was your playbook, Spider? Which one did Sly?
Yeah, I picked Foresight, which basically lets me add a roll, an additional die to any of my team members' rolls without incurring stress.
Yeah, two times per score. So score is like a session, or like a session is a score. You can assist a teammate without paying stress. Tell us how you prepare for this. So even in the special abilities and the mechanical abilities, they are still asking for roleplay because it is very much narrative driven.
Yeah. And then Brandon, what did yours say?
Mine was different than hound? What I thought. For a hound, I chose scout. When you gather information to discover the location of a target, you get +1 effect. A target can be a person, destination, a good ambush spot, an item, etc. So it doesn't have to just be a person.
So you could have used that to gain increased success rate on your capturing of the diamond, right? Or gem or whatever.
I probably could have, yeah.
Okay. All right. So overall, we're really beginning to flesh out our characters at this point. We've applied the points. I do think it's worth noting that it does give you a nice list of names and stuff to go by for your character that are thematic to the world.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that I really like is, and we touched on it briefly in the last episode, is you get to pick one close friend and one rival.
Yep.
Now, this to me, and I believe Alex or one of the two gentlemen here actually had pointed out earlier, not only is that for your benefit, but that is a resource for the game master to pull upon.
Oh, yes.
Which I think is super, super awesome. Like for my spider, since he's a, manipulator, I chose an ally as an informant. while the rival was an alchemic chemist or some alchemic master or something mm-hmm. like that, right? Because one, I'll tell you why I picked that. And I encourage everyone to make these decisions when you're picking these options that, hey, I'm going to pick this guy because part of one of my pieces of equipment that I get is being a spider is a gas grenade. It basically knocks people out.
Yeah.
Right. And so I tied it to that item that the rival, Riven is the one that he gets this stuff from, but he never pays the dude and always promises to pay him back. So he's got this really big debt, but never pays it back. So he's always running around, and that's why he's always with a new crew, because he spends all the crew's money, then he goes somewhere else. So what did you guys put any thoughts into your close friends and rivals like that?
Yep. Like, basically, the two I chose, like, one was, like, Lenny, who was my younger brother, but he also worked at a temp agency, and a lot of information also came across his desk, too. Mm-hmm. Like, see, like, where all the jobs are going.
Nice. I like that.
Whereas the enemy I picked was some other pit fighter who I broke one too many times.
Right. It's all jacked up. Alex?
On the dangerous friends for cutters, one of them is Grace, an extortionist. I actually used her as whenever somebody wouldn't pay me, we would like tag team, you know? And then I actually remember because I didn't know how to pronounce her name, but Chell, which is the mm-hmm. second one, is a vicious thug. They are my enemy. And I remember that the reason why they are my enemy is because they are also into designer handbags. But there's only so many designer handbags that are in Duskfall. And right. so I always get there for they're like my rival in Pokemon, where they're like, I'm gonna challenge you, and I always beat them. So that's kinda that's Chell.
That's awesome. What about you, Brandon?
Oh my god. I chose my two just on a whim, and I waited for a moment when it was most relevant for them to pop up.
Yep. But I like it.
Okay, is that the guy in the plague mask?
Yes.
Yep. And but see, that's great. It tied right into the story and became a key turning point because of the one you picked based on that NPC's features, right?
And the best part is that because our character sheets are available for everybody, not just the GM, Justin ended up using my rival, who was a bounty hunter, to come after me. I didn't tell him who my bounty hunter was. He just looked at my character sheet. Okay, so he's a bounty hunter. All right, watch this. And it worked well. It really did.
Keeping in mind, Sly planned it all and had it all worked out ahead of time.
Yeah, sure he did.
So the thing I want to touch on with this and why I think this is cool, because you pull from a list that's on a list of options, and your rival might be somebody else's ally. Mm-hmm. Or your ally might be somebody else's rival and vice versa.
That would be great.
Or it's possible for the group to have somebody have the same ally and same rival. So that creates very good interconnecting stories in a fun and engaging way. If I tell my crew that, hey, Riven's going to be showing up here soon. Oh, so just tell them I'm not here, that I've gone out to the theater. Having a few drinks, you know me, living the lap of luxury, whatever you got to do. And while I'm trying to duck him, Brandon's character may be like, oh man, hey, it's good to see you. You got any more explosives for me? Or something along those lines. And I can see that creating some potential problems between mm-hmm. the players and the NPCs. So once you've picked your rival and your friend, you have to choose a vice. Now, I think this is fun because it basically gives your character a flaw that has a mechanical benefit in the game.
Yep.
So when you're engaging in your vice, you reduce your stress, though there is, you can overdo it and then screw yourself. But I think you get trauma if you do too much of the vice in a short time or something. For my character, vice was luxury, which basically means he has an exuberant taste for ostentatious displays and indulgence, right? And so that came through in my role play as the reason why he's a mastermind and manipulates other people is just so he can indulge himself. That's it.
Because
it's easier than working hard. And it showed that because he sent them on the adventure or the prep and the planning while he went and watched a theater show and drank some dank wine.
Dank wine.
Whatever. Dank wine.
So what did you guys, did you guys pick any particular vices and did you include them in your...
My guy's a drunk.
Yeah. Saw that coming. Did that come through at all as far as the way your character interacted with stuff?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It did.
I know Samuel, you got him tore up.
Yeah. Not just Samuel.
Oh. He got himself
hammered in the job. And I also passed off a martini, which I poured the rage potion into to the other gang member.
That's funny.
And
I chose weird. Yeah. And no.
What's weird?
Weird. You experiment with strange essences, consort with rogue spirits, observe bizarre rituals or taboos.
See? That's an open opportunity to start talking to stuff that's not there.
That's what I should have done. That would be great.
Like, hey, Khajiit is hungry. No, I don't want that. I told you, I don't like it.
Khajiit told you that place is too expensive. Who are you talking to? None of your business.
What about you, Alex?
Mine was luxury, and I did the designer handbags. And I would say that it was very interesting to choose something so like outlandish and then try to put it in. It made me more invested in the character. I don't know about you guys, but actually like being able to be like selfish with my character, like make my character selfish, like that made me more invested.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that that's something that really is thematic too, right? Because while we're a crew, it really is most every man for themselves. It's not like D&D where you're expected to help. You're like, no, nah, man, we're running from an owlbear. I'm going to trip you and keep running.
Yeah.
That's not typical when you are running a D&D game, but it's expected almost in Blades in the Dark, which I think is awesome.
I mean, in a 4-hour session, we had a giant betrayal. I mean, it's like written in to betray each other. Yeah. Somebody earlier said that this is like Grand Theft Auto 2. Yeah, if Grand Theft Auto 2 was set in like the 1900s, yes, that's what this would be.
Grand Theft Carriage.
Grand Theft Carriage. Carriage.
So,
the kid, she's here pulled by giant goats.
So now that you've got your character created, they do encourage you to pick an alias and get into good detail of describing your character. Which is really, really nice because we're big on, you know, what does your character look like? What are they carrying with them? But what I want to get into is once you create your character, on your character sheet is a loadout.
Yep.
Which basically means you have access to all the items on the loadout. But you have to pick how prepared you're going to be. Are you going to be light so you're fast and less conspicuous? Are you going to be normal where you look like a scoundrel ready for trouble? Or are you heavy where you're slower and you look like an operative right on a mission? Or you can get encumbered where you're overburdened and can't really do anything except move very slowly. Now, most people probably aren't going to be the pack mule at overburden. But what makes it interesting is you don't actually pick the equipment in advance.
Nope. Like, basically, right when you go to the job, you can go, okay, here's my available equipment. I'm picking these ones. Go.
Yeah. And I don't even... Do you have to do it when you're on the job or when an action requires where you need it?
I assume you pick it when you start the job.
Oh. I don't know. Alex, do you have any clarification? Because when I read it, I thought I interpreted it as... You pick your load, and then as you need stuff, you can pull from it until you meet your loadout.
I took it as, I mean, I guess you see you pulling stuff that was not in your load by using the flashback feature, because you planned it ahead of time, but...
Maybe. So, the way that I rule it, the way that I would have ruled the languaging whenever I read the language is that before you go in, you pick your loadout. However, my game master, whenever I was playing, ruled it that, okay, so if you do a light, you have to pick light, normal, heavy. And right. then that, of course, depicts that changes how people interact with you. But then let's say you get up to the door and all of a sudden you need burglary gear. Well, you could either do the whole flashback thing to do that in a big old rigmarole, or you can just tick off burglary weapons. And then as you go through, but once you pick three, you're done. Once you pick five, you're done.
So I am reading the loadout here, and it says, during the operation, you may say that your character has an item on hand by checking a box for the item when you use it.
Okay.
Up to a number of times equal to your load. So
it's the way Aaron did it.
I wonder if some of the confusion is they mentioned this stuff multiple times throughout the book.
And it kind of blurs together. Yeah, I can see that.
We ran into that confusion earlier, too.
Yeah.
Because I think there are a few sections where the way they list it, present one way, I can easily see like some sections being treated more as a guideline than a hard rule.
Right.
So the way I did it was I chose three.
Yep.
And then before every time we went out for prepping or doing our missions, I would select the three items that I wanted for that mission until I came back and I had to redo my loadout.
Yeah.
See, that's how I read it. Yeah. That's how I interpreted it. But Aaron interpreted it where you pick during the thing, and then once you're out of tokens, you're out of tokens.
All right. Before we move on to crews, this show is brought to you by our sponsor, us. Everyone loves monsters and NPCs in their games. They're the core staple of any story, any adventure, any heist. Well, you can pick up memorable monsters in PDF at Crit Academy or hardcover and PDF through DriveThruRPG. 50 fully fleshed out monsters and NPCs with backstories, short-term motives, short-term goals, long-term goals, ideals, bonds, flaws, even different ways to use them in your stories and campaigns. I promise you, if you want to make your game's memorable, you got to pick up this book. So let's talk a little bit about crews. We kind of gave an overview of the crew sheets previously in the last episode. But if you're joining us for the first time, not only is there a sheet for individual players, but the crew as a whole. And what makes this really great is that it creates a connection from the player's actions as a group to the factions and the world outside, what's going on with them. Mm-hmm. And I think that is really, really cool. And you get to do a myriad of different things, but it starts with doing what? Choosing a type of crew that you want to be, right? So it groups them in a couple of different categories. So the team can decide, do we want to be assassins, which are basically, killers for hire? Do you want to be a mercenary or a thug? They execute battles and extortion and sabotage with the Bravos. You can be a cult, acolytes of some forgotten monstrosity that they call a god. Are they vice dealers? Do they execute, product procurement and covert sales to other people. What'd I say? Hawkers? Try to hawk their wares.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Shadows are very much the intricate spies. And then you have the smugglers that are all about contraband transportation. Now, we really didn't decide on what we were going to be. I think I just said, I want to be a smuggler, and everyone just kind of went with it. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because I think we just want to keep things moving.
But they also, they did throw me under the bus for my name and wouldn't let me be Smuggle Bunnies, which I'm still disgruntled about.
Do you think Crutches would be perfect group called Smuggle Bunnies? Just saying.
I'm just saying that who's going to expect a bunny to knock their head off? Just saying.
It's called a rabbit punch.
So what, Alex, when you were creating your character and crew, what kind of crew type did you guys pick, and what was the name?
Smuggler, but essentially, so we, our first session was us finding out that people were selling Leviathan blood, and not the tentacles, but the blood, and they were drinking the fuel and getting high off of it. And so one of my people knew the chemist, Revan. So we went to the chemist and we were like, hey, why is this making people die? Like, why are people like, whatever? And so if we found out that, the tentacles themselves are hallucinogens or something along those lines. So we started a smuggling ring out of an orphanage being drug dealers.
We were drug dealers.
We got, because we had a couple of people who were had contacts with this with the fishermen. So the fishermen bring the Leviathan, you know, bring the Leviathan in for draining, and then they put the monster back out. Well, we were allowed to cut off some of it, and our the place it he was the, Aaron decided that our place was gonna that our like lair was an orphanage, and he didn't realize. So we decided to use the kids as drug mules.
Oh, come
that's the kind
on.
Of game this is, though. So that's what we did. We used orphans as drug mules to deliver drugs.
No one ever expects to know the orphan to carry drugs.
It's
did
true.
They did they carry them?
Yes, they carried them. They did not do the drugs.
Well, I was just trying to figure out where.
What's
they,
in the basket?
How are they? Were
grandmama's lunch? Very well. Be on your way.
Carry on.
Well, they were like poor. Like urchin kids, so they
like
would.
I envision them like, okay, here's what's gonna happen. You see this big loaf of bread? There's something bad inside it, and I need you to take it. But once you arrive, you get to keep the bread. Right?
Wow, that's messed up.
Well, they're orphans and they're probably starving.
We paid them. We did pay.
Them?
No, we paid them. We paid the orphans. We paid the orphans.
That's a really smart idea, but that's pretty evil.
But right, well, we ended up starting to like rebuild the orphanage. Like in the last session was the one that we decided where our money was going to go to rebuilding the orphanage so that the kids, because like, have you guys ever seen that movie? It's an old movie. It's kind of like a musical. And
Annie?
What?
Annie?
Not Annie. It's like the same time period where there are these where these urchin boys, they're being used by this guy. I know what I'm talking about. Anyway, it's
Peter Pan.
Not Peter Pan, but
Newsies.
I think it's Newsies. I think it is Newsies. I don't think it's Newsies. But the point is that we, like, the orphans were in on it, and they were our, because you can have like little like half characters almost. Mm-hmm. Those half characters were the orphans.
Okay. Which become part of your lair and crew.
Yes.
So that actually leads us into, you know, where you're staying. You're talking about the orphanage. They give you some nice little collections here. One that I really thought was interesting was the junked rail car, which is rusted in place on its old overgrown tracks. So they give you some good inspiration. But tied to that is on your crew sheet is like a block chart of different areas around your area, like a district. And part of it is you have to establish your hunting grounds, which I think is really cool, where your crew is brand new, but you've kind of chosen a small part of a particular district as your kind of hunting grounds. And so you have to kind of interact with the area around. That includes, you know, paying off any other, you know, crews that might be in your area, or maybe you owe a bigger faction a constant pay, which I think is really, really cool. Or you don't pay them. They just come take whatever the hell they want. And now that's another challenge the characters have to overcome. What were your guys' thoughts on this whole concept? I know we didn't get to delve into it in our first impression one shot, but the idea behind it is really, really cool, especially with how our actions tie to it. Hey there, RPG fans. Do I got something awesome for you? Blood and Doom, a dark fantasy tabletop role-playing game, a collaborative and immersive storytelling experience shared by a game master, which they call a doomsayer, in Blood and Doom, and a nice group of players. Yeah, I'm sure you're nice. You may have seen similar games being played on shows like Stranger Things and Big Bang Theory and other tabletop shows. Well, in Blood and Doom, players take on the role of adventurers in a doomed world where the influence of a malevolent cult is slowly corrupting the land and its people, with its secrets and danger lurking around every corner. The game is published by Dice Tale Games and is conceived by its amazing creative team that includes several any award-winning writers and game developers. The Blood and Doom Quick Start Primers will be releasing on March 21st, free to everyone, so don't miss out on it. It offers a massive chunk of the game's rule set and a large part of its setting, and two playable adventures at no cost to you. The primers come ahead of Blood and Doom's Kickstarter release on April 4th. It will feature three rulebooks with over 1,000 pages of content, an epic soundtrack, a Doomsayer screen, and Roll20 integration, and so much more. So, are you ready for a dark fantasy? You're going to want to check out Blood and Doom. Follow them at rebrand.ly/bloodanddoom.
I was with GTA 2, and I like the idea of that being here because it allows you to make those allies and those enemies, and depending where you're at in the city, could be safe. It could be dangerous. You just walk around that corner and that's it. It could be that. But also what I thought too is,
where is our buddy Khajiit? He went out for food. That was 3 days ago.
Which district? But then I also had a thought too is, okay, so you do work for a Gang Alpha, right? And then Gang Bravo's reputation goes down. It's like, oh, we don't like them. But what else is like, you're taking items from Alpha and refeeding it into Bravo to in an attempt to bring their reputation up. Mm-hmm. So you're not messing your everything away. Maybe you could be allies with everyone eventually somehow.
As a very heroic way to do it.
Yep.
Let's be friends with everybody.
I would love to see you try that.
It sounds like it'd be really, really difficult.
I'd love to see you try.
As I mentioned in the last episode, I watched the first 2 episodes of Peaky Blinders. And in the first episode, 2 episodes I should say, they made it very clear that the main character, he wanted to muscle in a little bit on the racetracks. So he started taking actions to fix races without permission from the gang that fixes the races. Episode 2 comes along, he gets into a fight with another gang, which seems to be, it basically starts a rivalry between them. It seems inconsequential at first.
Mm-hmm.
But then the second game, Gangsley walked in, it's like, hey, you're fixing our races our permission. They almost got into a conflict. But then suddenly the first game's like, hey, you hate this third gang? We hate the third gang too.
Let's be friends.
Even though you know the first game's manipulating the other two gangs to kill each other.
The enemy of my enemy.
I just want to say, your wife got it. It's the movie Oliver.
Ah.
She messaged me and I was like, damn it, that is the movie. So I just wanted to say for chat, for people listening, thanks, the honey. Movie is Oliver.
Oliver.
That's basically what we did.
So once you establish your hunting ground, there's, you know, you have to deal with the factions in some capacity, paying them off or showing them respect or, you know, keep your money and then get negative effects, right? But what's interesting is your crew has a special ability that you can pick.
Yep.
So you get to take a look at the special abilities for your crew and choose one. And if you can't, they do recommend just going with the first one, as it's the kind of their, all the first options
the
are
default.
Meant to be the default if you're not sure what fits, which I think is a really slick way to lay it out, by the way.
Like Hound was supposed to be sharpshooter, but I chose differently. That makes sense.
When you do this, you do pick, you know, as I mentioned, the different points and factions and how they're distributed, but you get to get additional upgrades for your crew, just like your characters as you level up and all that stuff, which is really, really nice. But you also have to pick a favored contact or faction, as well as one that's unfriendly. So right from the get-go, you're hostile or not in good favor with somebody for some reason, which is really nice. So I want to give an example of one of the crew abilities. So here is one called quality. Each upgrade improves the quality rating of the PC's items by that type beyond the quality established by the tier, which is basically your level. You can improve the quality of documents gear, which is for burglary and stuff like that. Arcane implements, which is for like spell casting, strange gizmos, or supply tools for blowing shit up and tinkering with stuff, or of course weapons. So I think that these, they come in variety. That one's obviously gives you a variety of what is your goal going to be. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be, you know, hawkers, being in, taking this benefit and increasing the quality rate of documents would make sense. But everyone kind of has to agree on it, which I think is nice.
Yeah.
And the, one of the things that I also want to point out is that, again, this is an extremely narrative-driven one. So the first thing that we did is we did quality. The only pip we ever did was quality. And the reason why we did that pip was because we wanted to be able to have quality product to, like, give to people and also, like, keep our ledgers pretty clean and all that kind of stuff and, like, concealed and, like – and so – how that ended up happening is we hired a sleazy accountant. we hired a scumbag accountant, and Aaron literally role-played this scumbag accountant who was a rude to everyone but was phenomenal at ledgers. So we were just like, okay. But, like, again, all of these things allows you to have, like, narrative moments and have like, different ins and outs. Because then, you know, later on, maybe this scummy ledger, the scummy accountant comes to us and is like, hey, I kind of need you guys to take care of something for me or else I'm going to go to jail. You know, it's like there's just so many push and pulls.
Michael C.?
No, I don't remember his name, actually.
Oh. So I think that overall, this character creation and crew creation process is fun, engaging, and unique.
Yep.
And
I do think it's nice, too, that you can advance your characters, not just by earning experience from doing your jobs, but through, like, what you decide to work on through downtime, working together as a team, building each other up in that regard, too. And as we kind of touched on a little bit, with Alex's group, they all picked a quality that they all benefited from.
Yeah, so which is awesome. Yeah.
I did want to point out, too, I was going to point out earlier, I'd forgotten about it up until now, because I got kids, and I'm always busy, I don't always have the time to be able to, like, read through the books and stuff, and I was a half hour away from our game, I still didn't have a character, and the way the character creation is set up is so simple.
Yep.
It reminds me of point and click on D&D Beyond. It's like, okay, I want this, and you're ready to go.
It's
within within 20 minutes, I had my character ready, and I was going to do my thing.
Yeah, I noticed the mechanics either.
But
like, it's all on one page, and it says, pick one of these.
Yep.
So I was like, how's the mechanics work? And Alex said, oh, it's just D6 rolls. It's like,
it's just like school. Multiple choice. You're going to be fine no matter what you pick.
Yep.
Yeah. I was worried it was going to be like the cipher system. I was like, oh, I'm not going to have a character in time. It's not going to happen.
Because of the type of systems credit, though, once you got on your sheet, you're good.
Yeah, once you got the sheet, it was really good.
Super easy. All right, so the last thing I just want to make a quick comment on is Ian mentioned the downtime, you know, stuff. That includes dealing with characters incarcerated, which does happen.
Yep.
Dealing with heat and letting the heat die down. That, remember, that heat dying down, if somebody takes an action, they could get incarcerated. So you're still part of the crew, but you're busy. Sorry, can't use that character for a little while.
Or working deals in chains.
Which is a very convenient reason to skip a session.
Yes. Absolutely. What happened? He went out for lunch, got caught.
It'll be great. You keep making characters over and over and over again. They just keep putting put in jail to the point and the extent where...
It's full?
Your crew controls the jail now.
Oh.
that's smart.
That's the new level smuggling right there. Smuggling them into the prison.
Your layer is the jail.
Yeah, right.
That way when your rival gang member's leader gets put in jail, he's not coming back out.
All right. we're coming to our time here.
That could be a good assassin's crew.
Maybe the executions are planned assassinations, and you're rigging or framing people so they get in prison so you can legally execute them.
Now here is our Unearthed Tips and Tricks system agnostic content for your tabletop RPG game.
Our magic item of the podcast is...
The Boots of Silent Step.
I saw that, didn't you hear?
Because we just have played the Blades in the Dark, of course we're going to talk about a magic item that helps with the whole espionage stealth thing, right?
Yep.
So these black leather boots are incredibly light and flexible, allowing the wearer to move with incredible speed and agility. While wearing the boots of Silent Steps, the wearer gains the following abilities. Now, keep in mind, whether you're playing 5th edition or another game, that the overall concept is to make them better at the stealth skill.
Yep.
right? To make them quieter, more stealthy, sneaky, whatever metric you are.
And obviously we built the hard stats for 5e, yes. But doesn't mean you can't apply for anything else, right. Or adjust as needed.
So whatever game you're playing, in this one, we add a D4 to any stealth check rolls, right?
Yep.
That's not a huge bonus.
But it adds up.
But it adds up. You can also move across any solid surface, including walls, ceilings, as if it was difficult terrain to do so, but you must have at least one hand to grab on to the surface. While moving this way, you can still make stealth checks, but cannot move faster than your normal speed. So now...
And you hear a bass string every time you take a step. Only you hear it.
Oh, jeez. Dude. Like the... What is dude. The what is the music from dude. The Pink Panther we were listening
dude.
To?
Do-do-do.
I made that up.
And then yeah. As an action or on a turn, the character can also basically grant the equivalent of spider climb for 10 minutes. That can be used once per day.
Yep.
Now, the overall goal of this is to do what?
To get in, get out through not your usual avenues of travel.
Absolutely.
Sneak up on your victims.
Now, it is worth noting that the boots of the Silent Steps were originally crafted by a legendary rogue named Volturin the Silent, who was known for his incredible speed and agility. He was a master thief who specialized in heists that required him to move quickly and silently, and he spent years developing techniques and equipment that would allow him to excel at his goals. Now, this is one of his most prized possessions at the time, but unfortunately, turns out it's not difficult to replicate, so it quickly became a mainstay of all thieves and assassins and other underbelly thieves, as it is a simple, uncommon magic item.
Or, it could just be the quote of an uncommon magic item in regards to crafting it with difficulty, but
ooh.
The secrets for two crafting it might be kept secret by thieves' guilds or something like to that effect.
I like that.
I can see it running after people due to copyright
infringement. excuse me, the Volturin estate has observed that you are wearing his, and you can tell by just on the side, it's just a swoosh to represent the silence.
I'm sorry, we have copyrighted the Boots of Silent Steps. No. You copyrighted the Boots of Silent Steps. These are the Boots of Silent Walking.
And my name is Christopher. All right, what do you think, Alex?
I think that if I was playing and I was a player and we came across these boots, I would not give these boots to the rogue. I would give them to the barbarian, personally.
Oh, that's awesome.
Give them to the
paladin. I would give it to the heavy armor person, the paladin. I would give it to the bard, because the bard could like use it to be more stealthy and then get into position better this is like something that rogues created, but everybody else is like, no, it goes to the because like I just think about...
Damn it, Bill, these were made for you because you keep getting us caught.
Yeah, exactly. Like, literally that conversation. Like, you keep getting us caught. Here you go. Like, I love that. Like, I had a paladin in one of my games who was wearing heavy armor, so they had disadvantage on everything. And this would have really, really saved a lot of headaches. And so that's what I would use this for, actually.
I like that. B?
I was saying before, I can see it's being used as... Primarily rogue, being able to sneak in and getting caught up on their victim, or trying to get in position up on a ceiling to come down onto that gem, like we tried to do in the other night.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
But the paladin idea is just...
That's spot on. I think that something like this, we can also do a little bit more with the fact that it doesn't have to be just somebody for sneaking, but maybe a sharpshooter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who has to get to a good... advantage point, right? So they might want something like this, and strictly for access to the climbing like a spider, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe anyone wearing this going through a room where the floor is trapped with pressure plates, they don't activate the pressure plates.
Ooh, that's
something
interesting.
Something along those lines.
Ooh, that would be nice.
I like that.
They're giving them advantage on it.
Does anybody else wonder what the opposite of the Boots of Silent Step are?
The Boots of Thunderous Running?
No, Boots of Screaming Steps. Every time they walk, rah, 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 rah.
Hey! Hey, guard! I'm over here! No!
Well, could you imagine that? It gives you super speed, so you run at 3 times your speed, but it shouts, hey, I'm over here the whole time.
Every step is run.
Okay. Oh, or it seems like a kid on a roller coaster.
There was, I don't remember what show I was watching. But
every time you step, it sounds like broken glass.
There was a cloak of stealth that was like that. It was sentient, and it never shut up. So it would grant you these huge bonuses to your stealth score, but imposed disadvantage on every check. So you got like a +8, mm-hmm. but because it's always going, hey, are you sure you're going the right way? We're going the right way? This way? No, I think you should have went that way. We should definitely go the other way. It's shorter, I promise you. And it's just talking out loud the whole time.
Let's ask the car what he thinks.
Hey, guy!
All right. Do we have anything else we want to talk about as far as the Boot of Silent Steps? Is that name too generic? I couldn't think of anything clever or witty.
Well, given the fact that...
I think that's good.
Yes, and the fact that this is tied to Valtorin. You can probably like, drop Valtorin's in front of it easily.
Ooh,
enough.
Valtorin's Boots of Silent Steps.
Yeah.
What? Whispering Walking? Ooh, that's really good. See, now it's got to be Christopher Valtorin. Christopher's Walking Silent Boots.
It's Christopher Walking Silent Boots.
All right. That'll do it for our magic item. The Christopher Walken Boots of Silent Steps.
I now picture that trash talking whoever's trying to attack you. Heads up! No, but
no.
But I got a crossbow. So? That doesn't make any sense. Too bad.
Isn't that from a movie?
Yes.
I was going to say, I think I've seen that scene somewhere.
The player tip of this week is you and your crew. Many fantasy RPGs, players take on the role of a singular adventurer, where group adventures... Like, if you make a group adventure, you all have a common goal. Now, obviously, the most prominent example of this would be the Mighty Nein or Vox Machina. But I really think that, if I was the Dungeon Master, I would take this a step further, especially if my players took on the initiative to make a secret society or a pact. I would begin to have NPCs actually start to join this pact as well and kind of build this thing out more akin to the crews in the Blades in the Dark, where there's kind of a secondary storyline going on along with the storyline that the players are actually going through. And the fun part is that if you guys initiate it, that means that the Dungeon Master knows that you care about it, so they're going to care about it. It's a lot more fun whenever it's player initiated. So it's pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward. All you do is you make yourself a name, you decide what your common goal is, and as you go along, other people will actually start to join along with you and want to join and join the crew with you. You may be able to establish a hideout or like a fortress or a keep. You may be able to, like, this could be a very fun adventure for you guys where you guys go clear a keep and now build it using Strongholds and Followers by Matt Colville. Extremely, extremely fun stuff can happen. But what it actually does, the most important part is that it unifies you. As a dungeon master or as a game master, it can be incredibly difficult to try to keep people in the group whenever there is not necessarily a super common goal or a common, you could say, trauma that happens to the group that keeps them together. This is a way to not only help yourselves have more fun and create more loving connections with NPCs and with the world, but also to help your DM or your GM have more stabilized things to throw at you. What do you guys think?
I love this.
My parents already got a name picked out for themselves. They did it themselves.
Smuggle bunnies.
Smuggle bunnies.
They wouldn't let me pick smuggle bunnies.
I liked smuggle bunnies.
You guys!
We're not the black rabbits.
We're the black rabbits and our nemesis were the white bunnies. I don't know. Anyways, my players, they call the group Tempest Equitem, Time Warriors.
Oh, that's cool as hell.
And they have a base that they made, and they've actually started hiring people to like take care of it and stuff. And they don't take advantage
of
the base enough.
A gold sink.
It is a gold sink. That's why.
That's a good idea. Gold sink.
Because I broke the economy. It's like, I need these guys to spend money. Hey, there's this nice house over here. You should buy it. But they're not taking advantage of the stuff going on in the basement in their dungeon. I gave them each like specific rooms for like training and stuff. Like one of them is an archery range, and it's a skill challenge. And if you can pass all three skill challenges, then you get like advantage on your next five attacks or something like that.
Oh, that is such a cool way to do it. Because it expires.
Yeah, in the same archery range, there's a button on the end of the wall, and the rogue has to do five stealth checks. The DC gradually gets higher and higher and higher. But if they can get to the end and push that button and make that light turn green, then they get advantage on stealth checks throughout the day or whatever.
I love it. You found a really cool way to do boons. I love that.
They had that. There's a music room for the bard. There's an alchemy room. There's a blacksmithing room. They got all the stuff they can use to.
This sounds like a potential RPG product, if you ask me.
Yep.
Yeah, it does. I love it. But yeah, they've decided to start doing this, and they're hiring people in and things. They've even got contractors and spending more money to make sure they have towers and guards on watch all the time.
So how does that impact your world, though?
Like,
is this impacting the local area around them? Is it making it more wealthy because adventurers are spending gold?
No, but they have gotten a reputation within Waterdeep, so they do get asked from time to time to do adventures or things that they need to be done by common folk.
Okay.
That's where they hide the artifacts that they find, because they have a vault in the basement that's hidden in the walls.
Hiding them instead of using them?
Yeah. They don't know if they actually do things. They just think they need all the parts to make one giant weapon, and they just recently found out that every artifact has an actual ability they can use.
Oh, no.
They're like, oh, shit, all of our artifacts are back at home.
All right, what about you, Ian?
There's definitely lots of ways you can go about it. Like I was kind of saying earlier, you could either join or even form your own guild, and as your reputation grows, you might attract other adventurers, and the benefit is you can send them off on other jobs, and they can report back, or you can use it as an excuse to do troop play, if you will, where each player has multiple characters they can cycle through.
That is a really good approach.
Yeah.
So, you know, as Alex talked about a little bit, each character has their own kind of personality, but a crew has an overarching goal, right? So even if Ian and Brandon's characters have different motives in general than me, we can all agree that as part of this crew, like in Blades in the Dark, we were smugglers. That's our overarching goal, right? And so our crew becomes known for that overarching goal. Sure, you have the thug over here that can, you know, knock a guard's face in, and then you've got the backstabbing asshole sniper over here with Brandon. It's now twice I've been betrayed by this asshole, and I'm really getting sick of it.
The first time that was pretty epic.
But anyway,
twice in what, 8 years?
Yeah,
I do want to point out that the first time was technically in the Battle Royale, so...
Yes, but that's bastards.
No. I tried to play into the moment.
Yeah, and you did. It was great. Yeah, it I'm giving well. You a hard time, but I really loved it.
Yeah, I know.
So when you're building out your characters and deciding on a crew name, think about what your crew stands for, or your guild, or your clan, or your base of operation, whatever it is, because it becomes a powerful resource not only for the player game master or the players, but also for the game master. Because once you start to get renown and your crew is known, people will seek you out. And once they start seeking you out, that's more opportunities for quests, more opportunities for loot, more opportunities to play different characters, because Ian already touched on one of my favorite parts, is because you're all part of the same crew, you can change them freely and it won't be weird.
Yep. I was talking about when I learned from Game of Thrones. No, I was a smuggler. I was not a pirate. What's the difference? The difference is if you're a famous smuggler, you're not doing it right.
that's actually a really good point. If you're a famous smuggler, you're not doing it right.
That's funny.
Could you imagine the players making like a guild that's like a retirement home for old people, and then they just like do a craft day where they do quilts and stuff, and they just end up taking these quilts and selling them on the black market?
You think might be Gilmore, aren't you?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. My fingers hurt. What was that?
One of my favorite pieces of Final Fantasy XIV is actually that there are these things called retainers, and these retainers will go out on quest for you to get like mundane items. I think that it would be really interesting if, you know, you built up this keep, you built up these people, you know, it is a really good money sink. Because to be honest, you know, once you get, I would say, ninth level. It's like, what do I spend money on? Because, like, you can't give me the really, really good stuff yet. But I want it, and I have the money for it. So this would be a good money sink. But they can get, like, mundane items, like $1,000 gold, $1,000 diamond for Revivify. For spells, they would be able to get spell components for you. And that's, like, something that I also would really like to implement. So...
Yeah, I think having you and your crew player tip is really good because in addition to all the stuff we've already said, it really gives your characters an overarching goal and why they're together without having to have super big details about it, right? Mm-hmm. If you're smugglers, for instance, everyone's in that crew because they want to be in the smuggling business regardless of what other stuff that they're doing.
Yeah.
And every action you take now affects the crew that you're connected to. So it's not no longer, I don't care about this. Well, I care about my crew because they give me a location to do my work, or I have retainers or all these things. So if I screw up and get kicked out, right? So now there creates a sense of community that's usually not there, even with the edgelords that don't want to be part of the group. So,
yep.
Now, the one adventure I just thought about with this kind of... setup, if you're running multiple characters, is you always run into the occasions where some situation might come up and say, why would my character participate in this?
Yes. And this kind of helps mitigate that a little bit.
This guy will.
Yeah, so you can push him off to the side and grab, hey, you know what? Ian's random character doesn't want to do this, but you know what? Ian's other character would love this. Is that what you want to do tonight, Ian? Yes, I want to switch characters. Let's do it. And I think that that's a win for everyone, right?
Right.
So, especially if you like to change it up just to try new classes.
That way, sometimes when you have a character go against the character's backstory, you can make the argument that's just the player not being cohesive with the group. I was like, okay, but
right.
Sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes things put them in a situation that is necessary.
Right.
Yeah, maybe you're an assassin that became a smuggler. Why? Because you killed the wrong person. And now you got to smuggle yourself. And the best way to do that is to join a smuggling crew.
Or you're a runaway nobleman and the hit they want to do is at your old family estate. You're like, no, I'm not touching that.
Right. I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. All right, I think that'll do it for our player tip, you and your crew. We've come to our time for this episode. Hopefully you've enjoyed it, and will be joining us in 2 weeks when we discuss advanced gameplay in Blades in the Dark. It's important to note that as we discuss these tips and tricks and all this stuff, these are tools you can take with you in all your games, and we're going to touch on all that. So please come and join us. If you enjoy the show and you want to support us, visit us at critacademy.com, follow us on social media, and leave us a review. If you really want to help our show grow, and you would ever be in our debt, as Sly was with Raven, whatever his name is, please share our show to your social media, to your favorite Facebook groups or Twitter groups or what. All that stuff, Discords, and help others find our show. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Ian.
I'm your co-host, Alex.
And I'm your co-host, Brandon. Thanks for listening.
Have fun on your adventures, and don't be a dick!
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.